again to the National Intel Report. I'm filling in for John Stadmiller for the next 3 weeks as he recovers from his trauma and pays attention to the management of the network. We have Hans callers. We will start taking them after the next commercial break. We see friends and partners linking U.S., Russia across the Internet coming from the Ford Foundation. And they say the goals of the Ford Foundation are to strengthen democratic values, reduce poverty and injustice, promote international cooperation, and advance human achievement. They also talk about the activities of the Ford Foundation in Russia. And they want to focus on the following broad areas: human rights, legal reform and legal education, independent analysis of economic and social policy, higher education and sociology, politics, economics, and modern Russia history, regional civic initiatives. What do you think the connection between the Ford Foundation and this tying together friends and partners linking U.S., Russia across the Internet, Hansa?
Oh, I read about the Ford Foundation. I actually was it the grandson of Henry Ford. He actually resigned from that Ford Foundation. He said in one public release that Ford Foundation lost its purpose and is becoming more of a political tool. In a sense, and it's turning into a leftist foundation. So you know, I haven't had a chance to research the these things, but it's sort of funny that the Russians want to lecture the world about human rights. You know, when they are the ones, the new Russian regimes that protected all these criminals that were torturing and murdering people throughout the years, murdered their own people. You know, and these people are still active in, or in the public life. You know, we can start with Vladimir Putin. He was part of the KGB. He was, in fact, he was, according to my sources, he was stationed in West Germany and was uncovered as Soviet spy, and he was deported from West Germany during the 70s. You know, once you're part of the criminal organization, KGB is not just intelligence organization. I mean, agency. It's a criminal organization because you know, it's responsible. It was responsible for countless murders of the Russian people. Was responsible for assassinations in the West. You know, these people are still there. What happened to the freedom in Russia and the so-called glasnost, what Gorbachev stated and bragged about? You know, when these people are still free, you know, these criminals, and they were never tried, and the same thing happened in Eastern Europe. I mean, I have the case involving former Czechoslovak prime minister. He ordered two people assassinated, and he was brought to justice after 10 years of waiting period when the new regime, so-called democratic regime, was stonewalling the whole process, and then he was let go free.
We'll be right back. Stay with us, listeners. Take your phone calls momentarily.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Chris Gerner, filling in for John for the next 3 weeks as he recovers from his motorcycle mess. We all get those at one time or another, people. Hansa, and we're about to take phone calls. Rowan Gaither, and he was the president of the Ford Foundation in 1953, stated to Norman Dodd, who was part of at the Reese Committee, one of these committees, congressional committees investigating Sovietism and communism in America. And Rowan Gaither stated to Norman Dodd, "We would use our grant-making power to comfortably merge," and this is not the exact quote, "comfortably merge the U.S. with the Soviet Union." That's what the Ford Foundation was designed to do back in 1953, to comfortably merge the U.S. and the Soviet Union. So it all seems to fit together today with this Moscow connection on the website of AmericanExpose.com.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are people that are committed to the communist cause, even in our country. You know, the Communist Party USA was as very well known right hand of the KGB. You know, these people were always connected to, you know, there were people uncovered among their ranks that were Soviet agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is nothing new, except these people live in a little bit illusion because they were promised by the Russians to be part of the new merged imperium, mm-hmm. which you know, that's totally, you know, false, and they live in a wonderland basically, because the mm-hmm. the real comrades from Moscow will never allow anybody but them to rule the world. That's their plan, and you know they had to allow the Chinese to be part of the game, but that's because China is so big, and as far as the population, and they are willing to help, and the Russians really need China in the strategy and in the implementation of it. These people, you know, they call them useful idiots basically, because you know, once these people lose their usefulness, they'll be dealt with just about the same way as the rest of us. They are perfectly willing to sacrifice their own agents here in America in a nuclear attack just uh-huh. in order not to make anybody suspicious of the attack in the first place.
Amazing. Hans is his name is spelled H-O-N-Z-A, Hanza, H-O-N-Z-A, listeners. We're going to take phone calls. Gadfly in Pennsylvania, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. And a minor technical note is that you're actually 1 kilohertz higher. It should still be at 7.466.
Thank
you. Which if folks are tuning on synchronous detection receivers, that might be a little too far away to track if they didn't know that.
Thank you.
My uptake I'd like to deliver in warmest regard to Almost Honest John from Ohio, the communist, to whom there is, of course, no greater sin than that of anti-communism.
I don't see him calling in right now.
Yeah, that is, you mentioned the HUAC. Now, you do, I hope, understand that there was never anything called House Un-American Activities Committee. That is a deliberate, over 40-year-old lie. It's actually the House Committee on Un-American Activities. So they deliberately transposed the words and the acronym, which should be HCAU, of course, because it makes it look like that what the committee was doing was an un-American activity.
Oh, I see.
Interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yes, everybody, that should be a lot more widely known. Even my Bill Gates of Borg Encarta Encyclopedia gets it wrong, and they don't have the correct one as an alternate.
Hmm.
And that was all, gentlemen, and God bless.
Thank you very much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to John in New York. Once again, the number to call, people, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. And hello to John in New York.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hello, John.
In 1992, I was graced to go with the water wastewater delegation of the Eisenhower Roosevelt. Dwight Eisenhower People to People Organization. And I went on a water delegation of wastewater and water. And I actually was approached by a gentleman that said he was an American, kind of a local of China, that was dressed in Chinese clothes and whatnot, and said he was coming through Russia as a diamond entrepreneur, I guess. And actually they had like railroad, stagecoach robberies on the railroads out there. You'd actually be killed for your boots or whatever. But at the same time, he said you could buy a nuclear weapon for $50 maybe, but at the same time the Chinese were monitoring us horridly. We were the first time in that country in a long time when they opened the borders, and anything we said was monitored. And as I photographed and talked really fast in my camera, because we were driving on a bus, and it's like in China you have a different kind of stores all along and all mixed together. I was trying to tell what they were. They got nervous, and they actually videotaped their, you know, audio taped my conversation to my camera. And at night we were also taped. And then the other thing that happened when we were out there is that the, like going into the country, I was at that time I was a young, you know, like a young military person. They had a red line and a green line, and they put me in the red line for about 2 hours to get into Beijing. What else can I tell you to help you, maybe? We almost felt like we were set up because we were talking like, well, we never saw a fire engine. Well, all of a sudden you'd see a brand new fire engine sitting out in the middle of nowhere, and they tried to conceal stuff from us. But at the same time, I think the people in general, we were told by our guide that when Tiananmen Square happened, there was not, you know, more than thousands of people, millions of people actually trying to turn the government around. They were around the railroad tracks and protesting everywhere, but he said, don't tell anybody, because he'd actually be killed even at that time after the fact of, you know, committing a sin, I guess. So anyhow, it sounds like your government's about like our government, except your government, or the Russian government, that is a little smarter than our present leader. Actually, I see some things that he's doing, and I feel the Russian people and the Chinese people are in general about like us. It's just these leaders that are controlling things and creating this animosity, and they want to kill a lot of us. And now, who's in charge of who is a real big question. And I know the finances. The Russians, even though they're supposedly poor, are in this country buying up our country because they have the money and the financing to buy up our platinum or gold mines or whatever else. And I mean, the big boys are still in control, and I don't care if it's Russia or China or U.S. It's the big boys we got to worry about. It's the common people. I don't think we're all worried.
The people of all the countries, the individual people, we just want to live in freedom and peace.
Right.
And it's the leaderships that are manipulating the whole picture.
Well, the question is, when I served in Czechoslovak military, we always had the supplies. They would rather leave people died of hunger than if the military didn't have the supplies. So there was never any hunger. The thing is, what the Russians created with all these news releases in the beginning of 1990s, they were trying to get our Western money to support their supposedly in trouble economy, which is totally that was totally false. They are perfectly capable of creating these kind of reports because they control the media over there. So I have a report that was done by a secret committee set up by Boris Yeltsin. This committee was headed by Gennady Burbulis. And he was basically he was the one who set up the report. During that report, it said that Russians were basically at the same time when they were begging for our money, they were transporting their money in gold and American dollars into America and Western countries. Let me read real quick. I found the notes here. According to Burbulis' committee, the Communist Party Soviet Union, assisted by the KGB and GRU, transferred over $20 billion in assets to 7,000 bank accounts around the world between 1989 and 1991. The money was transported by Russian diplomats in diplomatic pouches. This operation was merely a small part of a much larger operation aiming at the penetration of key Western business sectors. While Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev was begging the West for foreign assistance, the KGB was frantically transferring billions in currency and gold to various Western countries for the purpose of buying Western businesses to use as false fronts for subversion and sabotage. In addition, the Russians used communist funds to create at least 84 companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange. This economic network is growing and operates in Austria, Sweden, Germany, France, the United Kingdom, Belgium, Japan, Canada, the Philippines, and the United States. So they were transferring. I know about operation that the Russians were setting up selling Soviet diamonds in America. One of the cases involved wife of uncovered KGB agent inside the CIA, who was Czechoslovak citizen, Karel Kircher. He was uncovered in 1984 and basically deported. Then he became part of the Academy of Sciences of Czechoslovakia and worked there closely with the today president of Czech Republic, Václav Klaus, you know, and with these people that supposedly created the revolution. So they had KGB officer right next to them. So, yep. And his, I'm sorry?
They still have, it's just like, you know, the John Deere Corporation bought up the a large portion of the Belarus Czechoslovakian farm tractor, and they control it to where they put it down and hurt the business, to control the business through John Deere. But at the same time, it's like they're telling us we have junk Ford and GM stocks now, where if you buy a GM car, it's 100% of your salary today, where it used to be one-fifth of your salary, and they can't live on it.
Thanks,
it's all being orchestrated.
John. We'll be back. Thanks for your call, John. I appreciate it. Well done. We'll be back. Stay with us. And welcome to the Voice of Freedom chat room members listening to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us today. We're with Hanza Molina. He's a Czechoslovakian defector, meaning he had to get out of his country. He had to slip out of his country because he could not leave his country. Just like in Russia today, you can't leave your country. Just amazing how things are going at this point in time. The phone-in number, once again, 800-313-9443. Let's take Tony in Texas. Welcome to the broadcast, Tony.
How's it going?
Fine, thanks.
Well, one question I'd like to ask real quick to this person is, what has come about with the investigations in the past couple of years with Osama bin Laden and the dealings with the Chechens and some of the suitcase nuke bombs?
Okay, that's a very good question. I don't think anything came out with that investigation because, again, the Chechen mafia is being run by, quote, former, unquote, Soviet Special Forces officer, Shamil Basayev.
Okay.
He claims to be born again Muslim, which is totally laughable to me because such people were highly trained communists, especially in the special forces. There's no way this gentleman would be anything but communist. Of course, the connection with the Russian government to the Chechen mafia is also obvious. There was one operative of the Chechen mafia that was actually allowed to be part of Russian delegation one time. You know, the Chechen mafia is set up by the Russian government in order to pretend that Russia has also a terrorist problem. So any connection to, you know, we can also ask, you know, since, you know, the Chechen mafia is basically portrayed as the source of the nuclear bombs to Al-Qaeda, you know, or possible source, you know, we can ask, you know, how come these people are able to lay their hands on nuclear bombs, you know, what the Russians are claiming, basically. You know, there are so many loose ends in this, and it doesn't make sense to me, based on my experience in the military, this is even accepted as a logical explanation what really goes on. So, in fact, the deception methods the Russians are using are clear to me that they are preparing us for a major attack, and in order to achieve it successfully, they have to remain unnoticed behind it. So, you know, Chechen mafia is, again, I repeat it, it's the creation of the Russian state. It's a state-run mafia. Again, there's one important fact about this. Since these are so supposedly freedom fighters for the independence of the Chechnya, how come they only hit civilian targets? How come they never attacked any Russian military or government targets? They killed people in the Moscow theater. They murdered people in Beslan, in that school. I mean, if these people wanted to have sympathies of the world as freedom fighters, they wouldn't attack any of the civilian targets, period. So this is, again... I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Well, this is, again, part of the Russian strategy, deceptive strategy to bring us, to bring themselves in the same situation as we are after the 9/11 attack. Of course, there was a case in the Russian city of Ryazan where there were some peculiar people trying to set up charges in, underneath the apartment building. They were noticed by the local police, and the local people reported it to the police. These people were chased, and there was a phone call intercepted by the switchboard that was tracked to the FSB, formerly KGB, office in Moscow. And these people were calling and trying to find out what really, you know, what they should do. So they were ready to blow up the building and blame it on the Chechen mafia. You know, luckily these people, you know, this was published by Wall Street Journal and also by some other places, and I believe there was an article in England that kind of questioned the integrity of this situation. And the Russians, of course, blocked all the publication, you know, raided the local newspapers, bribed the people that lived in that apartment, and the local office of the FSB, the security service, moved in immediately, and they claimed later that these were only bags of sugar, and they were testing the local citizens how vigilant they are. But you know, there was another explosion that actually I believe that they were successful, and people died. So you know, these cases are not you know, to the let me put it this way: to the communist, human life doesn't mean anything. You know, the ends justifies the means. That's all there is to it. And we are trusting the wrong people.
And it seems like the Muslims have the same sort of idea with, you know, if you kill yourself or blow yourself up, you get to sleep with a bunch of virgins in heaven. Or if you kill jihad, if you do jihad and kill an innocent person, that's what you're supposed to do, as it's taught in the Quran. It's almost the same belief with communism to me.
With the exception that they have to achieve the world domination, they would never allow anybody but themselves to become the rulers of the world. I'm talking about the communists.
Good point. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. We'll be back to continue the broadcast. 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. My guest, Hans and Molina. The website, theanticommunistanalyst.com. It's partnered on our website, americanexpose.com, engineered by Darren and Dennis. Fabulous information. All over the place on the website, AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K. Let's move to Mike in Maryland. Mike, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you very much. It's a great show.
Thank you.
You not only have a very intelligent and very astute guest, but he's very brave as well, because I would imagine you're probably on somebody's hit list, you know, somewhere. You know, it's probably several hit lists.
That's... You know, I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I really applaud you. If I may, if you, you know, indulge me, there's this great book. You may have mentioned it, called The Perestroika Deception by Anatoly Golitsyn.
Right, right.
Can I just read a couple quotes from it?
Sure, yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. Convergence will be accompanied by bloodbaths and political re-education camps in Western Europe and the United States. The Soviet strategists are counting on an economic depression in the United States and intend to introduce their reform model of socialism with the human face as an alternative to the American system during the Depression. All these points must be publicly revealed. There's another footnote here. In a different context, the Russians may be expected to provoke an incident unattributable to themselves involving the explosion of a nuclear device somewhere in the West, not excluding the United States. The purpose would be to reassert or reemphasize the necessity for the American-Russian partnership now and to create pressure for eventual world government. This was written in March of 1989. Mm-hmm. Is this guy a visionary or what?
Well, he was, Gallatin was proven totally correct, 94% correct, by, you know, when he published the first book, New Lies for All. He predicted the fall of the Berlin Wall, that it would be a strategic, operation of Moscow. You know, I have documented on my website as when he said the word re-education camps. As a matter of fact, the communists tested setting up the concentration camps in Czechoslovakia before the collapse of so-called collapse of communism. There was Operation Codename Norbert that dealt with it. It was done in eastern Slovakia, so it was like the eastern side of Czechoslovakia, so it would be out of the way. Basically, they had several groups of people that it was done on paper, though not really publicly, so they would avoid any kind of breach of security and stuff. They had four groups of people that they were basically arresting, including the foreigners. They had one section that involved the foreigners that they would be liquidated and totally also isolated based on their political association and stuff. Of course, these people are watched all the time. There's an ongoing operation in Czech Republic called name VEC that actually supposed to collect and prepare for trial, future trials, statements of people and their association with various right-wing organizations, and this is being done on a vast scale. I know about this because, as a matter of fact, I witnessed part of it, and I have this I took some pictures of these kind of gatherings. They create a situation where some kind of supposedly right-wing person is persecuted or dragged through problems, and then they try to catch the people that are finding themselves sympathetic to this kind of person. Of course, they don't have a clue that this kind of person is basically a communist agent pretending to be right-wing. That kind of they tested this, and that was
kind of
an investigation. I'm sorry?
Kind of role-playing?
Yeah, of course, yes, absolutely. I would imagine they set up some kind of forum, internet forums here, discussion groups that have moderators that they took, they collect personal data on people in case something goes on. But these are really people recruited by the Russians and related services of the Eastern European intelligence networks, and they are really confident they're gonna win. And in order to destroy the opposition in America, they have to know who these people are.
Sure. Well, according to Charlotte Iserby, whose book I have but I haven't read yet, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, we have two former KGB generals, Primakov and Karpov, and the former head of the East German Stasi, Marcus Wolf, working for Homeland Security. Are they going to be able to pull this off? Are they going to be able to turn this into the United Soviet Socialist States of America?
Well, it's working towards it right now. Look at what Child Protective Services is doing to their families.
Well, they first of all, I think this operation is not going to be peaceful. They only softening America in the sense that they are bringing us into. They would like to. First of all, I think they would like to create a civil war in America, because there's only so much the American people will take. Of course, our government is there are people that are highly compromised and probably recruited by the Russians. And of course there are people that are associated really with the communist ideology, and they really believe in it, and they are disguised mainly in the left-wing part of the government. Of course, don't forget that the era of Bill Clinton and some of his people are still a part of the government. So really, it's up to us, American American people to defend the country. And, you know, they would love to create civil war. If that doesn't work, at least they bring us into a state where the country is not really able to understand who's the enemy, how we should really defend ourselves, that it's not really the Muslim networks, which, you know, it's impossible that the Russians would ever allow them to have nuclear bombs, you know, in the first place. That's nonsense. So it's really that the big state sponsors of terrorism, that's Russia, China, and some of their formerly Warsaw Pact countries.
And the USA, on the guys at the CIA.
Well, yeah, of course, there was a major infiltration into the CIA, except, you know, remember the Aldrich Ames case, and he was the chief of the counterintelligence section of the CIA, so he probably installed other people in there, because this is the standard procedure, how these people get involved. You know, you have one agent in, and he helps to get others inside the agency, and therefore, you know, the CIA is useless to defend America, basically, to recognize that the enemy is not really, you know, it is the Muslim networks, but behind them, you know, is the Russian state and China, you know, and basically what happened, that statement from General, Czechoslovak General, who defected in 1968, General Jan Šejna, was part of the decision-making circles over there, so he dealt with Khrushchev and Brezhnev and Andropov and, you know, with these people. He stated that the FBI was already so infiltrated during the 50s that they had compromising data on J. Edgar Hoover. They could destroy him any minute they wanted. You know, they already had agents inside the FBI back then. So, you know, this is how serious the infiltration was even back then. So you think this is just stopped just because the Russian communists claim that their system of government collapsed? I mean, this is you know, we can see that there are several people in the administration, including Condoleezza Rice, that, you know, that are claiming that it's the only way to deal with communist China is through diplomacy. I mean, we should put China on notice that if one nuke blows up in America, or anything else happens, that we will wipe out the entire country. You know, this is the only way we can, you know, and make the American people aware of this, that we are facing really terrible situation here, you know.
Well, thank you very much. Our leaders are so compromised and cowardly, I don't think that would ever happen. So I'll get up there and let somebody else talk. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for your call. Here we see Hansa from the Boston Herald, dated April 8th on the year 2000. It says the United States and Russia, and this is regarding Gorbachev, together have to repair their deteriorating relations and help ensure Russia's economic and political viability, former Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev said at Northeastern University. Quote, both sides are to blame for the deterioration, end quote, said Gorbachev, who presided over the dissolution of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s. Quote, Russia is suffering from an inferiority complex, and America is suffering from a victory complex. I am afraid we might fritter away the environment of trust and developed between our nations in the late Soviet era, end quote. Gorbachev here to address a gathering of policy experts at Northeastern, acknowledged rampant corruption in Russia and siphoning of international aid to private accounts helped destroy confidence among foreign investors. Interesting, Hansa. What's your read on that?
Well, you know, I've heard these lies before. I mean, you know, first of all, your listeners should know that Gorbachev, first of all, is a general of the KGB. He was the favorite pupil of late Yuri Andropov. Back then, there's no way that this, you know, we are seeing the so-called Western analysts analyzing the you know, how the Gorbachev single-handedly basically created this perestroika and glasnost and brought the communism down and realized how you know, freedom is much useful, you know, if this was true, he would have been shot 24 hours after he announced any of that. You know, that's just the way it works over there. So, you know, this is total nonsense. You know, for example, I'm looking at an article from Washington Times, October 2, 2003, written by former Romanian spy chief Ion Mihai Pasepa, and this is regarding Iraq. Russia is behind the evanescence of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. After all, Russia helped Saddam get his hands on them in the first place. You know, they created a system, codenamed Surrender Plan, emergency exit. Pasepa implemented it in Libya. It was for ridding third world despots of all trace of their weapons and if the Western imperialists ever got near them. We wanted to make sure they would never be traced back to us, and we also wanted to frustrate the West by not giving them anything they could make propaganda with. You know, of course, this is just part of the stuff the Russians were involved in, and they're still doing it, you know. The Soviet bloc not only sold Saddam its WMDs, but it showed them how to make them, quote, disappear. Russia is still at it. You know, this is from Pasepa again. In the late 1970s, General Primakov ran Saddam's weapons programs. What you may not know, so that Primakov hates Israel and has always championed Arab radicalism. He was a personal friend of Saddam's and has repeatedly visited Baghdad after 1991, quietly helping Saddam play his game of hide and seek. So, this is just to show you one part of the Russian face. And of course, you know, when you see what you stated already, we have this problem with Russia that, you know, the only way to deal with Russia is put them on notice that if anything happens in America, they're going to be held accountable.
Yeah, and the likelihood of that with all the infiltration over the many decades,
yeah,
the leadership
yeah.
in place is quite remote.
Well, yeah, I know, but see, at least American people should know that there is
yeah.
a serious problem here.
Yeah, there you have it. And there is the situation, and this is where it lies, with the lies that happen all the time, including that coast-to-coast report that was on the other night regarding the fact that Al-Qaeda will be responsible for the nukes that happen in this country. It'll be attributable to the Soviet Union, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm saying it's totally impossible that the Russians would ever allow anybody control their nuclear bombs, nuclear weapons. It's totally impossible. You know, there was a statement. I like to know. You know, real quick for listeners, the 200 Russian nuclear bunkers in Russia, how they build them. Including the Yamantau Mountain and the Urals. I'm looking at the article published by WorldNet Daily by Kenneth Timmerman, long-term analyst, a very knowledgeable person in terms of Russian military proliferation. There was a congressional inquiry into this because the complex cost billions of dollars. At the same time, when Russians were claiming that the military is in disarray, they built two cities above the this nuclear complex. It's the size of Washington, D.C., and it's able to house up to 60,000 military personnel. Our military experts were never allowed in or anywhere near it. And the Clinton administration poured out tax dollars into Russia to supposedly take care of the Soviet-era nukes. But, you know, we witnessed that the Russians built 200 bunkers like this around Russia, including the one in Voronezh near Moscow, where they have underground subway system all the way to the Kremlin. I mean, you know, and these can withstand direct nuclear hits. So it's clearly Russians are preparing for war. There's no other explanation. And when you go back and see what I published on my website, that the Russians staged the collapse of communism, they were preparing for it for long years. It was in their policy. The long-range plan described by Golitsyn is totally accurate. We see that we are facing really nuclear war with these people. That's as plain as it is. And, I'm looking at, Chris, the specifics of the one of the most potential, most potent, I should say, Soviet missile. It's called SS-27 Topol M. It can hold, you know, it's totally indestructible. We don't have anything that can shoot it down. It's, you know, it's a state of the art, the best there is in the world. And it can fly, you know, if you read the specs on this, the Russian tested it successfully. If you read the specs on it, it's really bone-chilling. I mean, it's this is what they have.
Let me ask you, do you think, as we have nuclear power, we have laser power today, do you suppose there's satellites, and we have to ask another staff to the commercial pause, do you suppose there's satellites that have laser beams that can shoot the missiles out of the sky? We'll talk about that upon our return. I would think that we probably do. We'll be back to continue. Stay with us and wrap it up. Okay, welcome back to the broadcast as we wrap it up for this week. And Hansa Molina's been with us. The anticommunistanalyst.com is the website. It's connected to our website, americanexpose.com. We have one more caller. So a quick response here. Don't you think we have laser satellites in space?
Well, let me read it real quick. I'm reading from the Missile Threat website, which is very great. It's tied to people that are connected to Bill Kurtz of Washington Times, I believe. He's got it linked there. Okay, while the boost phase is the most vulnerable time for the SS-27, it remains protected. Hidden safely within missile silos and mobile launchers, a successful boost phase interceptor would have to be fired from near or within Russian borders or from space. And the SS-27 is also designed to survive a strike from any laser technology available, mm-hmm. rendering any current space-based lasers useless.
Mm-hmm.
The missile highlights the need of the United States to do more research in this. Of course, let me go a little further. The SS-27 can currently strike any target within the continental United States. The deployment from hardened silos and hidden DEL vehicles makes it nearly impossible to successfully prevent launch, and current ABM technology is insufficient to prevent its successful impact. The SS-27 enables Russia to guarantee a successful nuclear response. SS-27 has a range of 6,524 miles and is reported to typically be equipped with a 550 kiloton yield nuclear warhead. Unconfirmed reports suggest a yield of 1 megaton has been achieved, as well as the placement of up to 6 MIRV warheads. They have 50 of them. It was originally planned to build 350 missiles, but this has been amended to the construction of 50 missiles by 2005. I think this is deceptive information.
Very good. Listen, Hansa, when we conclude here, leave your number with the board operator so I can get back to you in a little while. Okay?
Sure.
You're going to be there a while, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take Gadfly once again as we wrap it up. Welcome back.
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. I just wanted to know if you contextualize it in the same way, Hans, when you mentioned about the Chechen bombings, and that is with the support for the Iraq war increasingly flagging in the U.S. and in Britain. I'm thinking, like you said, why didn't they blow up any government buildings, etc.? Now, do you see it the same way that, in other words, by bombing the metros in Britain, is that some Islamic radicals' way of saying, gee, what can I do to help regen up popular support for the war against radical Islam?
Well, no, you got it. You're mixing two groups. These are people in Chechnya that fight for independence. So, obviously, their target should be Russian government and Russian military, because those are the people that basically, ran the war, the bloody war in Chechnya. The opposite is in Western Europe, and of course 9/11. The 9/11 should have created notion that we are dealing with radical Islamists. You know, that's the opposite, and it's totally different than what the Chechen situation is about.
Hansa, thank you for joining us today.
Sure.
And thank you for your calls, caller, and Gadfly. We'll be on next week as well. Go to AmericanExpose.com. America spelled with a K. It's all there, including anticommunistanalyst.com. Good evening and good night.